Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Hear my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Good to know you're all out there and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, whatever that means. It is a Wednesday edition of the Guy James Show coming your way. I'm getting better at losing things all the time. I really am. Also getting better at not doing things I'm supposed to do here in the studio. Anyway, that's another story. Welcome to the show. Coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. It is a beautiful day today. I don't know, high 80s, something like that. Not so terribly humid as it's been. And, of course, we've had rain today already. We're in the rainy season, so we get a little rain every day, just about every day. How are you? How are you doing? Lots of news. I guess I haven't spoken to you since, since Michael Jackson has passed on. And I know many of you, as am I, are very weary of hearing almost 24/7 Michael Jackson news. I make people angry when I talk about such things sometimes because I am so, I don't know if the word's disgusted, dismayed. I don't know what the actual word is that I'm looking for. I guess disappointed in the American public for the way that we have put people up as icons and heroes, and I think celebrity has gone over the edge. And don't get me wrong here. Although it may not have been my exact cup of tea, Michael Jackson's style and his music and all, I do recognize I'm a musician and a singer myself. And I think people have told me so. But I do recognize talent. And it doesn't make any difference what kind of talent. For example, I can't stand to listen to rap and hip-hop. I just can't stand it. But I do recognize the level of talent that it takes to do it. And so of that, I am appreciative of people's great talents. It may not be something that I particularly like, but I can certainly see how much dedication and practice and all that it has taken for someone to reach the heights they have in certain genres of music or sports or whatever. And Michael Jackson not being one of my favorites, I did enjoy the heyday, Thriller and all that. It was an exciting time. It was a good time to go to a dance club. I remember a nice dance club that went to and had the proverbial sunken dance floor with the mirrors around the wall and the ball in the ceiling and the whole thing. And it was almost nonstop Michael Jackson and, oh, gosh, can't think of her name. I can hear her singing. But it was a big deal in the early 80s. It most certainly was a very, very big deal. And made a lot of people happy, entertained a lot of people, and I do recognize the fact that Michael Jackson is, without question, one of the most talented people that I have ever, ever seen. His dancing is simply phenomenal. I don't know that he had a particularly great voice, especially when he was an adult, but as a child, some of the songs he made were absolutely beautiful. But I guess the point I want to make here is, how far do we go with this? How far, you know, it won't be long until we'll be hearing stories of how people have cited Michael Jackson and Elvis in the same car heading down the California coast, or pulling up to Graceland, or the Neverland Ranch. Celebrity in this country is completely out of hand. I don't know what we do about it. I don't know how we turn the clock backwards on that. In fact, I don't think we do. But it's disturbing to me that some of the truly great people in this country are not recognized for their talents and their contribution to society. When somebody who is, and I use the word merely a singer or dancer, is held up to the heights as is a Michael Jackson. A bizarre adulthood, no question about that. I've always wondered whether he was mentally stable or not. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's all an act. I don't know. Seems like some of the showbiz personalities are a little over the edge anyway. But as that saying goes, it is what it is, and we will listen to it for some time to come. And when the toxicology reports come out in a few weeks from now, and we hear that he did or did not have certain drugs in his system, that'll be a huge story again. I thought what an oddity it was to watch his father being interviewed and talking about some new venture coming up, pretty much saying, being asked about the funeral, it was pretty much, and I'm paraphrasing, well, never mind about that right now. I got this new deal coming up here. An odd family, to be sure. Famous family, family that's attained all the heights that you can attain in showbiz, I guess. But I'm tired of it, and let's move on. It is not a story that we should be harping on forever and a day like the mainstream media is. But I guess that's where the ratings are, and I guess I don't blame the mainstream media, because after all they're doing is giving the people what they want. They know what the public wants. And they want the salacious details, and they want all the maudlin details of the death of Michael Jackson. They want every little tidbit that they can get. Well, I hope the whole thing's over with soon. God rest his soul. I hope he has more peace in death than he did in life. It appears that he was a troubled individual. And if that is the case, perhaps he's better off. Who knows? Who am I to say? We've got a couple of interesting guests coming up today. Number one is just an old friend, Chris from Minnesota, the Minnesota Independent. Our Minnesota correspondent is going to be with us around 3:20, I think it is. He's going to call. And we're going to talk about the Al Franken situation and maybe a moment or two about Michelle Arbel from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann. She's been in the news again this week. And I guess that's what I lost. I looked up a song today to play for that he suggested, that Chris suggested, and damn it, I've lost it somewhere. Coming up in the second hour, we have a gentleman by the name of Bob Amsterdam. Bob is a very celebrated attorney. He's been in practice 25 years. He's handled numerous international business disputes in a variety of the emerging markets around the world. He's both defended and prosecuted cases for and against governments and corporations, and he's a ballsy guy, as you will see. He's one of them that doesn't mind taking on the state. Most in particular, he's worked in Venezuela and he's worked in Russia. Absolutely opposed to Putin. So he's got a lot of guts, and we'll be talking to Bob in the second hour of the program today. To all of our Canadian friends, I want to say Happy Canada Day. I hope you enjoy your day. Yes, I'm kind of a student of history, but I'm thinking, what was it, 1867 maybe, when Canada Day was proclaimed. I'm not exactly sure. It was right in that neighborhood. I'm fairly certain it was during, right after our Civil War. Also, don't want to go too far today without congratulating the people of Iraq, for being a sovereign nation again and having the U.S. authorities out of their cities, we're told. We saw the pictures of people celebrating in the streets. I do wonder how they actually feel. We have noticed that there has been an uptick in violence in Iraq as of late. Quite an uptick, actually. We have heard some military people on the ground in Iraq express doubt that the Iraqi military and police forces will be able to cope with the situation there. I have my doubts. The sectarianism that is very prevalent in that country will continue on, and I think they'll be at each other's throats for a long time to come. I don't see any end of it in sight. But nonetheless, we are pulling our troops out of the city, we're told, with the exception of a few advisors. I see General Odinero got rather testy yesterday when asked how many advisors would be in the city, and he said, I don't know. And the interviewer said, what do you, you know, in essence, he said, what do you mean you don't know? You're the general. He said, well, if I told you a number, I might be wrong. Because it can change at any time. There might be some today, it might be a few more tomorrow, a few less tomorrow, so any number I would give you would be wrong. I got the feeling that Odinero really didn't know how many advisors would be left in the city to help cope with the violence that's currently taking place in cities like Kirkuk and Basra, and most particularly Baghdad. I just got the feeling that he didn't know for sure and was trapped with that question and was a little bit, got a little bit perturbed over it. Normally a very cool and calm and collected guy. But finally, after all these years, we have gotten to see a day in Baghdad where there truly was flowers and candy and all that. You know, we heard that right off from, who was it? Darchini? I said we'd be greeted as liberators with candy and flowers and all that. Well, finally we had a day where there was some candy and flowers, but it wasn't greeting us as liberators. I'm not sure yet what we liberated them from. I'm just not quite sure. I'm not sure they know what they were liberated from. Yes, Saddam is gone. Hussein and Qusay, or whatever his two boys were named, those two violent bastards of his. So they're liberated from that. But I'm not sure the deaths of over 4,000 Americans was worth it. And I'm not sure the deaths of hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis was worth it either. And I'm not so sure the people of Iraq feel that way. Oh, you know, we've talked to many, we had Dar Jamil and some other people on this program. We've talked to many residents of Iraq, and we've got live on the street reports from Iraq. I believe it was Dar Jamil that gave us the live reports from Baghdad some time ago. And I don't think I've ever talked to one person in Iraq. I don't think I've ever talked to an actual Iraqi who was grateful for American intervention into their business. I don't think I have talked to one. I've talked to many who were distressed by it. I talked to many who were very disturbed over the liberties taken by people from Blackwater and the mercenaries that we sent in, the horrible acts that some of them perpetrated upon the Iraqi people, crimes, actual crimes, that should have been punished and weren't in many cases. I don't blame the people in Iraq. I don't blame the people in Iran. I don't blame the people in Syria. I don't blame the people in the whole of the Middle East for harboring great resentment against the people of the United States and the United States government. I don't blame them. Who could blame them? And I say that not because of necessarily of just recent events. I say that because of the history of the meddling, most especially by the British and then the French and then us, into the affairs of those people. Let's see what we've got on the phone here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, hey, this is Chris Steller calling in from Minnesota.
Hi, Chris.
Might be a little early.
Well, you're a little early, but we don't care. We don't stand on ceremony around here. We're very informal people,
okay.
Just like you Minnesotans.
All right.
Yeah, you know, I'm a former Midwesterner. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, I'm from Ohio. You're more
my folks are from there.
You're more Midwest than I'm Midwest, but, you know, anyway.
Who's midder? I don't know, yeah.
But.
How's it going today?
Great. Big news up your way. We were
it's
hoping.
Big news!
Finally.
Finally. 8 months.
I called my friend on the Supreme Court up there and told him to get this business going, and he did.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
He lit a fire. Lit a fire. I noticed he didn't sign it. I was thinking that he was going to be the one to sign the opinion. But the way there were five justices that ruled yesterday on the Minnesota Supreme Court, and they signed it in a way that it was like on behalf of all of them. It's like a firing squad. You don't know who fired the. You know what I'm saying?
Don't know who had the live bullet.
Shot. Right. It was the same thing. They basically all signed on to it. You can call it a unanimous decision, but technically it was where they no one signed it. Yeah.
Have I got it backwards on the firing squad? If there's six of them, do five of them have bullets and one doesn't, or one has a bullet and five of them don't?
It must be the first way, to make sure, don't you think?
Yeah, so everybody's got a little doubt. Well, it might not have been me.
Yeah. Gosh, when I was a kid, I saw a movie about Joe Hill, the labor activist, and I think they had a firing squad scene in that movie. It completely warped me for life to see that thing on film.
Oh,
so, bad analogy. But anyway, we had a decision yesterday, and things went rapid fire because that might not have ended it. You know, we could have waited a few more days for a comment from Norm Coleman and waited some more to see if he was going to file something, and the governor could have hesitated about issuing a election certificate, but all that happened in the afternoon yesterday.
I was surprised that Coleman got it over with so quick. I expected a little more fight there, really. I really did.
Yeah, there's some calculation going on there about, you know, your political survival. You know, do you really want to take it further? What are your chances? I mean, at this point, people have been tossing around the number 12 as the number of judges that have reviewed this and all found in favor of Franken. That's totaling up the judges that have sat on various bodies that have considered this so far. That's fairly daunting when you've got a dozen judges of actually three different political parties telling you you lost.
And the third one you're talking about, the Farmer Democrat Party.
Well, that gets kind of complicated. Let's just call those Democrats, and then we've got our Republicans, and then the third one would be while Jesse Ventura was governor, he appointed some judges. And so those people, roughly, you might consider them to be part of the Independence Party.
Well, being judges, they don't call themselves of a political stripe?
No, it's not partisan, but if you're splitting hairs or trying to figure out who's who. You look at who appointed them. And
Jesse's boys. Okay.
Jesse's boys. Well, in this case, girls, too.
Yeah. So is this monster news in Minnesota now? I mean, I see the Minnesotans that I, my neighbors from Duluth, and
okay.
I mean, I've known a lot of Minnesotans in my life, and I see them as rather staid. Well, let me just put it. I think they are like the Lake Wobegon people.
Okay, sure. And there's been, I mean, I think it got people excited, except that, you know, I don't know that anyone was shocked or surprised. It was just relief, you know, and depending on your point of view, you were happy or sad, but a lot of people were just plain relieved, I think.
Well, I just would have to think that, talking to one another up there, being conservative people, not necessarily Republican conservative, but conservative and rather staid type people, that, they looked at one another and said, hey, Ole, I think it's time to get this over with.
Yeah. Well, to tell you the truth, I think that's another thing that influenced Coleman's decision was I think he is, you know, he likes to keep his finger on the pulse if he can, and he probably was getting that message that people were saying that kind of thing to each other. You know, he's a lawyer, and I think that, I mean, not necessarily always in a bad way, but that kind of warps your opinion and your outlook on things, and you see there's a logic, you know, oh, let's take this to the next level, or there's this argument to be made, But he also, I think, he looks out for his political backside enough to know what people are saying.
Well, so the governor has signed the, I forget what you call the document. He's signed it already.
Yeah, you call it the thing you need to get into the Senate. If
yeah.
you're passed, it's called the election certificate.
All right, so he has signed that.
Yeah, I've seen a photo of it, and, the governor sent out an email with a attachment that showed the thing, and it was so kind of gray and dull. I put it in my computer, and since it had this nice seal on it, right, like this little with sharp edges around the circle, and I thought, well, that needs to be gold, so I turned it gold in my computer, and I posted it on our website that way, you know.
So you had
just
to,
didn't seem like a drab.
You
drab,
had to,
gray,
you had to Photoshop your own seal.
I don't think I know it's kind of cheesy to do that, but it just didn't look right in gray.
Well, kind of cheesy for the governor to send out a plain old gray document too.
Well, maybe that was. Now the other thing was he did. The two people that co-signed this thing are the governor and the secretary of state, and one's Republican, one's Democrat. Well. The Republican governor, he held his signing in secret, or behind closed doors, let's say. And then the Secretary of State, he made more of a show of it.
Oh.
So we, you know, it was a momentous thing. I'm glad somebody made a show of it because, that was the piece of paper that was sort of the big struggle all these months.
So now is Al preparing a train procession for him to Washington with, you know, flags on the front of the train and all that, an honor guard and all, or is he jetted off to D.C. yet?
Could go through Ohio.
Well, he just about have to.
I think that's a good idea. You just have to.
That's the old question. I love geography questions. How many states do you have to drive through to get from Minnesota to Ohio?
Oh, well, I did it a lot as a kid. Don't forget a little bit of Illinois. Yeah, well, you know, Illinois.
Come on,
Indiana,
now.
Right
you,
away.
You got to pass this. You got to pass this. How many states do you have to do?
All right, I got it.
Okay.
Three, but not counting the one at either end.
One.
Oh no.
One.
Why is it one?
Come up through the UP of Michigan. That's one.
Oh.
I got
you. You got me. The last time I tried that, I hit a deer, so I don't want to do that again.
I guess not. No one wants to drive through the UP anyway. You talk about desolate anyway. the people are happy. Everybody's satisfied that you've got two senators now. I'm sure Michelle Bachmann. I'm sure Amy Klobuchar's office is thrilled over this. She's now the senior senator.
Hey, they can probably dump half their workload on this new guy now. He's the junior senator in the whole Senate. He has less seniority than anybody, but he got some pretty good. They saved some decent committee assignments for him.
Well,
anybody who's interested, they can see him in a couple weeks. He'll be taking part in the Senate Judiciary hearings on Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, how about that, being the junior senator and getting the phone right onto that? That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. He's not an attorney. I think most of those people are attorneys, but it'll be good. It'll be good. He's good on his feet. You know, everybody calls him a former comedian. And I've been wondering, can you really be a former comedian? Isn't that like riding a bike that you're never really a former comedian? So he tones it down now, but he really can't stop himself. I find his little funny asides, maybe I find those funnier than his routines, you know, but he's good.
Yeah, you're either funny or you're not, and some people are just naturally funny, and he's one of those guys. He was never, to me, just a really ha-ha funny kind of guy, but he came up with some good bits on Saturday Night Live and others as well. And
exactly.
I enjoyed his book very much. Rush Limbaugh's a big fat idiot. That was good reading. What do I want to say here? The most absurd senator in the United States Senate has already called him a clown. Yeah.
That's not a way to make friends.
What's his name from Oklahoma? Inhofe.
Okay.
The idea that Inhofe calls
showers together or something.
Well, Inhofe calling somebody a clown. I mean, if that isn't a pot calling the kettle black, I don't know what is.
And if Al Franken hadn't just got elected to the Senate, he'd have something to say.
Oh yeah.
His mouth
zipped. Yeah, he'd have a big comeback for that. How about Michelle in the news this week? She's rattled around a little bit on the shows. Anything to report on Michelle Bachmann this week?
Well, I forget if it was just this week or not, but this issue she has with the U.S. Census still has legs. She's continuing to talk that up, and other people are piling on, and I mean, kind of the latest thing, we kind of sensed this right away because, and I might have even mentioned this on your show, but it doesn't really do her service to discourage people from filling out their U.S. Census form. She's suspicious about what the government does with information. In our state, you don't want to discourage people because we're very close to the line where if we don't have, I think we're 1,000 people or something away from losing a congressional district. And then it's up to the state legislature to figure out how to draw the line. So instead of 8, we'll have 7 and any of them, but even Michelle Bachmann could potentially lose her seat that way. So.
Well, don't mention it.
Cat's out of the bag, but I'm sure she's not too scared.
Yeah, I heard her mention that, the census ask you this and ask you that and doesn't even ask you if you're a United States citizen.
She's got a lot of. That's a good one. She also criticized something that I've got in the mail. It was this American Community Survey or something. It's kind of done by the census, but it's not the same as the census. They already sent it out, and. You know, it was extensive. It was like, I guess, what the census long form is. I mean, they ask you a ton of questions. But I guess I just don't have the same worries as she has about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
it's the law. I could go to jail.
She was never one to pass up a good conspiracy theory. Not ever since she's been on the school board,
exactly.
I think. Well, Chris, we want to thank you for your update. We'll be contacting you again soon. I'm sure you probably got your notebook. You're probably going to follow Al to Washington and be right outside, be in his lobby somewhere so you can get up to the minute news. Or does your budget not allow for that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll be virtually. Actually, we have, I work for this website, the Minnesota Independent, and we have a sister site called the Washington Independent.
I know it well.
And if I really twist their arms, you know, I might be able to get them to go over there.
I should think so, because you would be the man. We don't want any Beltway people reporting on Minnesotans. You should be a Minnesotan guy doing it, and I'll put in a good word for you.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Well, Chris, good to hear from you once again. Folks, our Minnesota correspondent to the Minnesota Independent, Chris, and we'll be back with you again soon.
Okay, thanks.
Good to hear from you, my friend. How about that? Al is in. Al is in. How about it? Isn't that something? Well, we're going to go for a break. And hey, I heard from my old friend, and some of you won't recognize the name, and some of you will. I heard from my old friend by the name of Sputnik Weasel. Sputnik Weasel is a musician. That's his musical name. I don't know what his real name is. Maybe that's it. But Sputnik Weasel is the one that wrote the song that I've loved for several years, The New American Century, that we play on this program once in a while. And he sent me his new album. So I'm going to play a few of those today. And here we go, something completely different.
You and I cause chaos without the money to pay off. All the debts and the pain that we cause. You and I cause fucking wars. You and I.
Take me home, country road. Take me home.
Sputnik Weasel. How about that for a name? We'll have some more of this new album a little later on in the program. Here we are on a Wednesday afternoon, and let me see. Time for me to count the audience. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, I can count you, you know. Yes, I can. I can tell at any one time exactly how many people are listening online. 'Tis true. All we have to do is look at this counter, and I can tell if all the people who are supposed to be here are here or not. That's how we take attendance every day. Let me see. We got them in, and we got them. Oh, my. It's a light crowd today. Light. Come on, people. Get with it here. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I was speaking about Iraq a moment ago, about how they're finally breaking out the flowers and candy, not because Saddam is gone now, but because the people, the United States is gone out of their cities. I don't blame them for that. And I was starting to talk about the subject if, throughout that region, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Turkey, Lebanon, the whole Middle East, the entire Middle East, if you lived there, you would have, most likely, a lot of animosity toward the United States. Maybe not the people of the United States, but at least the government of the United States, if you knew the history of that area. Because the people there have been oppressed in amazing, amazing fashion for I don't know, 150 years, I guess. The brutality, actually longer than that when you consider the Crusades, about how when people went there for the Crusades. So tried to subjugate the people, went in and stole their resources, their money, their treasure, and tried to bring them to Christianity when they didn't want to be Christians. Told them, imagine an army coming through and telling you that you're heathens, your religion. Imagine a Muslim army coming through the United States right now, marching through the center of the Bible Belt and saying, you know what? Your religion is blasphemy. It's all wrong. Jesus Christ is an imposter. How would the people in the Bible Belt feel about that? How would they? I don't think they'd be very happy about it. And the people of the Arab lands and all through the Middle East, the other than Arabs, were very distressed to have people from other countries come in and conquer them and subjugate them and try and change their religion, try and change their culture, and take much of their resources. So this isn't something that came up lately. We've been involved for a long time. The United States started getting involved in the 19-teens, right in there someplace, a few missionaries here and there, and then we end up with military involvement over the years. And the British had lots of military, even the French. And so it's no wonder that we hear chants of death to America. And I don't say that in a proud way. I don't say that in an anti-American way. It's just that we've done those people wrong over the years. We have. And if you don't realize that, if you don't understand that, you do not know your history at all, and you should study the history of the Middle East. Because it's something to be ashamed of. It truly is something to be ashamed of. And it doesn't appear to me that we're doing anything to change that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know what should be done to change that. I don't know. It's a big enough problem now that it's too big for any man to sit down and try and solve by himself. But we're certainly going to have a group of people get together, and going to have to talk to the people of Iran, the leaders of those countries over there. We're going to have to get together and have some sort of a meeting and come to some sort of an understanding where we can at least tolerate one another. It can't continue going on the way it is. the word that's become so popular lately, this can't be sustainable. I think everybody understands that. And in light of other things that have happened there since the Iraq War, we know now, everybody knows, it's no secret about the torture. It's no secret about the waterboarding. It's no secret about the rendition policies of the United States. It's no secret that we've been just as brutal as other nations and with torture. We find out that the Central Intelligence Agency crucified. Imagine this. Crucified a prisoner in Abu Ghraib prison near Baghdad. This is from a report published in the New Yorker magazine. And let me quote it. It says, a forensic examiner found that he, the prisoner, had essentially been crucified. He died from asphyxiation after having been hung by his arms in a hood and suffering broken ribs. That is what happens when you're crucified. Gradually your ribs cave in and crush you and you can't breathe anymore. And the magazine's Jane Mayer writes in the magazine's June 22nd issue, military pathologists classified the case as a homicide. And the date of the murder has not been given. So in light of that, and in light of the discussion that we've had in America that had to be told, we couldn't keep this, nor should we have kept this quiet about the rendition and the tortures and the waterboarding and the hanging people by the, you know, all the awful things that we've heard. I don't agree with politicians who say that that should have been kept secret for national security reasons. I do not agree that it should have been kept quiet to keep our soldiers over there now safe, although I hope and pray for their safety. But this had to come out. This had to come out so that every man, woman, and child in the United States knows about it, and they should also know that every man, woman, and child, the people of these other nations should know that every man, woman, and child in the United States abhors that kind of behavior on behalf of leadership in this country. We cannot allow things like to happen under the red, white, and blue. We can't. And so it did need to come out. And I do disagree. I vehemently disagree with those in this country who claim we should have kept that secret. As you all know, the Allied commanders after the Second World War gathered up a lot of the German people and marched them through the concentration camps to let them see the horror of what happened there, so that it could not be denied, so that they could not say later on, oh, that's just talk, it never really happened. No, they made them see it with their own eyes so that they could pass it on to others that, yes, they saw it, that it was true, that this barbaric activity took place in their names. And that's why it had to be brought out into the open in this country as well, that this took place in our names. Well, I was looking at Fox News. Actually, somebody tipped me off to this. Looking at Fox News, and now I see Fox finally admits. They admit that they're a major terror-sponsoring organization. They admit it. And they admit it in this fashion. I hope this is clear.
So you have seen this. Do you really honestly believe that we have come to a place to where those very senior people in the highest offices of the land, Congress and the White House, really will not do the right thing in the end, that they won't see the error of their ways?
No, sir, they will not. Not the only chance we have as a country right now is for Osama bin Laden to deploy and detonate a major weapon in the United States, because it's going to take a grassroots, bottom-up pressure, because these politicians prize their office, prize the praise of the media and the Europeans. Only it's an absurd situation again. Only Osama can execute an attack which will force Americans to demand that their government protect them effectively, consistently, and with as much violence as necessary.
Which is, I find that statement, and I find that interview by Glenn Beck of Fox to be as offensive as anything that I've ever heard on American TV. The idea that this lunatic Beck brings this Schumann, is that his name? Sure. S-C-H-U-E-N, Schumann. And you've seen him on the tube before, a big-time neocon, that he could come on and make a statement like that is to me, well, it may not be treasonous, it is sedition. There's no question it is sedition. And it's okay with Beck, and it's okay with the Fox Network to trumpet the fact that what we need is another episode by Osama bin Laden to kill a bunch of people in the United States to bring things back to where the neocons want them, so that they can come back and rule with fear once again, like they did for a long time. Let there be no question. I wouldn't back down from making the statement that I truly believe, and I don't see this as being radical. I don't see this as being far left. I don't see this as being out of touch at all. To make the statement that I believe in my heart that there are many on the left. I'm not talking about average Joe citizen. I'm talking about people in places, high places, people in political leadership, the real neocons that led this fear the last time, the likes of this Schumann here and Dick Cheney in particular. I don't doubt for a single moment that they do fervently wish for another attack on the United States. To hell with the consequences. If it would help them regain power, that's what they're for. Do I believe that about Dick Cheney? Absolutely, I believe that about Dick Cheney. Sue me, Dick. If they could use your Hannitys, your Limbaughs, your Bortzes, those people like that, if they could use another 9/11 episode to bring the American people back into line, back to cowering in fear of what might happen next, and that Uncle Sam will protect you, they would do it in a heartbeat. Don't kid yourself. Don't kid yourself. Who was it? I forget who, what politician it was offhand that made the statement that he thought Cheney would go for that, and then he backed down from it. I wouldn't back down from it because it's the truth. If the Americans don't understand the character, the true character of some of these people by now, that lied us into a war, that lied us into a situation where 4,000 Americans and hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis have been killed. If they don't understand the character of these people now, I guess they're not going to. But I would not and I will not back down from saying that I believe, I absolutely believe in my heart and intellectually that the likes of a Dick Cheney and the guy that just made this statement absolutely hope and pray for another incident to happen to kill a bunch of Americans so that we can be the hawks that they want us to be. I'm convinced of that. That's not an off-the-cuff statement. That's not something said in anger. That's something I've thought a lot about, and I think all you have to do is look over the statements of these people, your Richard Pearl, your Wolfowitzes, your Cheneys, and Cheney's at the top of the list. I say that because in talking to people inside the Beltway, there are very few you will ever talk to that think that man has a conscience of any kind. There are very few that you will talk to that think that he is not one of the most loathsome characters to ever walk within the boundaries of the United States and maybe any place else on this earth. And then you get a guy like Glenn Beck out bringing people like this on fishing for statements like that. The idea that he said that, the idea that that statement has not been trumpeted on every network in the country by the mainstream media and have them reviled for what he said on that network, it just shows me that the press is not doing their job. Let me play this again. I want to play this again so that you get the full flavor of this again.
So you have seen this. Do you really honestly believe that we have come to a place to where those very senior people in the highest offices of the land, Congress and the White House, really will not do the right thing in the end, that they won't see the error of their ways?
No, sir, they will not. Not the only chance we have as a country right now is for Osama bin Laden to deploy and detonate a major weapon in the United States, because it's going to take a grassroots, bottom-up pressure, because these politicians prize their office, prize the praise of the media and the Europeans. Only it's an absurd situation again. Only Osama can execute an attack which will force Americans to demand that their government protect them effectively.
Only Osama can bring this country back to where the neocons want it to be. I've not heard a more shameful statement. Damn that man and any of his friends that believe that. And you know, the sad part is, you know there are many that do believe that. The hardcore neocons do believe that. If they could pull off a coup today, they would. If they could invite Osama bin Laden or anybody else to run a nuke into one of the major cities of this country, or knock down another couple of big buildings like the Twin Towers, or attack on L.A. or Chicago or any of that, they would invite it to be done. They'd put that on the scales. Let's see, can we have power if we do this, or without it, without having it happen, we won't be back in power again? They'll take the power. They'll take the attack, and they'll use it to hammer the people in power right now and say that they didn't protect us, but we will. We will protect you. Don't forget, George Bush will protect you. Uh-huh. Never forget that George Bush will protect you. That's the message. That's the message they're going to continue to bring up time after time after time. That is only they that can do it. George Bush kept us safe, you know. The only thing worse than Dick Cheney's bold-faced lie that the Bush administration policies kept us safe is them repeating it over and over and over again like they do. You know, if you ask all the mainstream media, exactly what kept us safe? How were we kept safe? Yeah, I mean, think of the thousands of tragic deaths that have taken place in this country. Thousands of soldiers died in Iraq. Were they kept safe? Did them giving their lives keep us safe? Absolutely not. And we had tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers injured. Some of them horrible injuries that will affect them for the rest of their lives in a profound way. Did he protect them? Did their sacrifice do anything to make America safer? No. Were we kept safe by the Bush presidency? How about the fact that the NSA spied on us? We found out later that they were spying on us KGB style. Did that keep us safe? Are we safer because the citizens of almost all of our foreign allies began to view the United States as a security threat as a result of the preemptive invasion, the policies of Cheney and Bush and their policies of torture? Has that made us safer? The horrible recession that was left for President Obama, the unemployment that was left, did that make this country better off? Bernie Madoff was running his scheme, his heyday during the Bush administration. Did that make everybody safer? Did that protect the pensions of people who had worked all their lives for pensions? The fact that we're in the deepest economic crisis since in the housing market, in particular, since the Great Depression, has that made us safer? I can list off dozens and dozens of things that didn't make us safer during the Bush administration. The idea that they stand on that, trying to make that their legacy. Well, we were safe during the Bush administration. Don't forget 9/11 happened during the Bush administration. Don't forget it happened after they had fair warning that it would happen. It's ludicrous for them to try and stand on some sort of a legacy that they protected us. I look at the record over the last 8 years that these people don't want to digest and don't want to talk about anymore. The idea that they somehow kept us safe, and it's laughable. No responsible person, no person with any intellect whatsoever, could look at the record over the last 8 years and say that we were kept safe in this country. Safer because of the Bush-Cheney administration. I wouldn't be picking on them anymore, but shut up. Stop it. No more. I don't want to hear any more of this nonsense coming from these people. And we hear, you know, John Boehner up recently promoting this, and Cheney won't go away. Shut the hell up. Accept your legacy for exactly what it was, a disaster. 8 years of a disaster upon this country. We know that many of you want some tragic event to befall the United States so you can put the fear back in the people and get them to march to your beat again. We know that. And I'm ready for it. And we ought to all be ready for it. Because the moment anything happens, the fingers are going to point and say, see, we kept you safe and he didn't. When the fact is, they had the table set for the worst financial disaster and probably the worst disaster for our military that we've seen in modern times. Well, it's come time for news today, and we're going to pause for just a little bit, and we'll be back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back after the news.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The IUECWA says busloads of its GM retirees will picket the GM bankruptcy hearing today in New York. The retirees are angry over GM attempts to terminate the retiree health benefits, according to the union. The IUECWA retirees are not being treated the same as UAW retirees in the GM bankruptcy case. The United Steelworkers has joined with IUECWA to fight for these GM retirees who stand to lose out in a GM asset sale. The two unions together say they have about 50,000 GM retirees and dependents who rely on health care and other benefits that are threatened by the GM asset sale. GM is refusing so far to negotiate a VEBA trust fund for these retirees as it did with UAW retirees. So the unions say that if the GM asset sale goes ahead as planned, the new company will have no resources left to pay any claims for USW and IUECWA retirees. Supermarket workers at three big chains in Colorado are waiting to see if an extension on their contract deadline will produce an agreement on a new contract. Jesse Russell reports.
The United Food and Commercial Workers Local, representing workers at grocery stores in Colorado, has agreed to extend current contracts until midnight on July 18th. The union is in negotiation with the state's three largest supermarket chains, Safeway, Albertsons, and King Soopers. On Friday, the UFCW Local 7 and Safeway announced they would be returning to contract negotiations on July 14th. That comes after workers rejected the supermarket's latest contract offer last week. The Safeway workers voted in favor of authorizing a strike if they don't see an improvement in wage and pensions. King Super workers rejected a contract offer 2 weeks ago. Contracts at the three chains were set to expire on May 9th. King Supers has an agreement with Safeway that if workers at one chain go on strike, the other chain can retaliate by locking out its workers. Complaints filed by the union to the National Labor Relations Board accusing the two chains of offering to hire temporary workers at wages higher than what current employees are paid have been dismissed. The UFCW represents 17,000 workers at the three chains. Here's today's economic report. According to a new survey from Watson Wyatt Worldwide, 44% of workers age 50 or older are making plans to delay their retirement. The number one reason being cited by three-quarters of those workers is the unexpected loss to their 401k accounts. Half of those surveyed now say they plan to retire at 66 or later. In the late 1990s, the average age for retirement was 62. In the 50s, the average age of retirement was 67.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting...
Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, it's Bob Amsterdam.
Hi, Bob. How are you? You're a couple minutes early.
I'm fine. How are you?
How did your flight go?
Just great, thank you.
You're in Germany right now?
I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to mention we have Bob Amsterdam with us. As we told you at the beginning of the program, Bob is an internationally known lawyer. He's been practicing for a long, long time. He's got, in my opinion, my humble opinion, from what I've seen and read about Bob, he's got more nerve than most people I know in some of the cases he's been involved in. Bob, welcome to the program. We're glad to have you along with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to talk to you today about international business and some of the cases that you've been involved in. I know you've had the temerity to stand up to people like Putin and Chavez in courts in their respective countries, and I wonder just how you get away with that, and perhaps you could tell us about the Yuko story in Russia.
Well, you know, the situation with most of these people is that they believe that they can make a farce out of their own legal system and essentially force lawyers to participate in trials where the outcome is already predetermined. And our position, I've been a longtime student of Russia, and I was aware of what the show trials were like in the 30s. And when my client, Khodorkovsky, was arrested, I, as well as the team of terrific, brave Russian lawyers we have, were determined we were not going to make that mistake. So while my Russian colleagues and I would sit in the courtroom and they would participate in the hearings, it was well understood that I would continue to make the political arguments that were necessary. And, in fact, you know, on the streets of Moscow, I argued that the real criminal in this case that had been brought was the Russian state and, in fact, in no small part, Vladimir Putin, for having not only used the courts to attempt to destroy Khodorkovsky, but to dismantle one of the most market-oriented, successful Russian companies, which was Yukos. And, you know, as a result, unfortunately, at the end of the trial, I was arrested in the middle of the night. But I think it's been clear that this case made it obvious that the Russian state had lost a lot of its early promise for democratic reform, and Khodorkovsky, who is today on trial again, a second absolutely odious trial, Khodorkovsky stands not as someone guilty of anything more than having the courage to attempt to take on the system. And many of us are hoping that when President Obama goes to Moscow, he will have the courage to raise these issues of democracy and the need for growth and protection of civil society in Russia.
Have you been able to bring this subject before the Secretary of State and the President?
Well, others who are resident in the States have been trying, and it's only by the results that you can judge their relative success. I think it's very difficult, you know, with a democratic administration right now, because there is this strain of what we call realism, people believing that the United States should focus solely on its interests as opposed to its principles. And quite frankly, I think that's it's a very dangerous road to hoe when you're one of the few states in the world that truly have as a fundamental part of your makeup the very existence of the rule of law and the separation of powers. And also, moving aside from human rights, I think the people who are emphasizing this, you know, focus on solely nuclear issues or military issues fail to understand that the Russian government is not like our own government. There are clans at the very top of the Russian government that are seeking to use the state as an instrumentality to acquire assets. And there is actually in the Kremlin today some people who care about some of the same issues we're enunciating. And those people, one of whom, by the way, may well be President Medvedev, those people are weakened by an America that focuses solely on its interests and not on its principles. So I think even these people that pretend to just want to focus on real politique are actually missing the boat.
Is Medvedev actually under the thumb of Putin?
Well, you know what? I don't believe that it's helpful to make that comment. Number one, it only empowers Putin. He doesn't need any empowering. Number two, if you look at the actual negotiations between their rival camps, it's clear that they checkmate each other. Number three, Medvedev has been Putin's lawyer for years, so there's no question Medvedev feels close to Putin, and I'm sure they reach something of an agreement on most subjects. But he has staked out a few distinct areas of territory. He has just recently relaxed a pretty restrictive law on NGOs, and he's sent out some signals that he's not exactly the same guy Putin is. Now, I'm not saying he's anything like a new messiah, but I'm saying there's a bit of breathing space between them, and we only hide that by simply calling him a puppet, and therefore I won't do that.
Right, right. Well, I was hoping he wasn't listening to the program today. Bob, how do you, you said you were arrested. How do you fare as opposed to the Russian lawyers? Are they more likely to suffer reprisals from this sort of thing than you are, since you're from the States? So how does that work?
Well, let me tell you, my Russian colleagues are as heroic a group of individuals as I think you can find. A number of them have been cited for disbarment. One of the leading lawyers in the country, a woman I greatly admire, Karina Moskalenko, has been subject to disbarment twice. And they are subject to a system that is egregiously evil when it wants to be. A lawyer named Vasily Alexanian, and I'd ask your listeners to remember that name. Here's a young man who, because when he took over Yukos, the power, those people in power found his activities offensive, he was arrested. He was placed in jail. He was asked to fabricate evidence to condemn Mr. Khodorkovsky. When he refused to fabricate evidence, this was a man who was HIV positive. The authorities took away his drugs, and they put him in a dungeon. A month later, they summoned him back for another conversation to see if he would utter false testimony. And when they refused, they put him back in that dungeon, and they made that dungeon a little colder. After a year of this type of treatment, Mr. Alexanian was fully HIV and in full-blown AIDS. He had lymphoma, he was blind, and he had tuberculosis. At that point, the European Court of Human Rights demanded his release. Three times his lawyers went to that court. Three times the Russian Federation refused to honor that order. And only when the French foreign minister, who is a doctor, called the Russian foreign minister, did this man get released to a hospital. Those are the kind of people that my Russian colleagues know they are dealing with.
My, oh my. Is this indicative of, the way they treat their own people, these lawyers and Khodorkovsky and others, is that indicative of this, I've heard you speak of a new kleptocracy that's taking place in Russia. Will it continue to prosper as they have as of late, and will they continue to amass more power, do you think?
Well, look, I think the present economic crisis, and I think Russia's about to go into the second wave of this recession, I think it has made a lot of people nervous about the future stability of the Putin regime and its legacy, because these are not people who have built an economic model that works. And one of the things we need to educate our realists in Washington is they've got to be careful that they don't hitch their horse to a sinking ship, because the Russian model, as it's presently situated, is just not doing very well. So I don't think that the kleptocracy will long remain as powerful as it has been recently. And I think there is a possibility for some change and some opening, but that won't happen if the very lenders they're going to and the Western states whose investments they want are simply going to avoid tough issues like rule of law. Like, let's take Shell for an example. Shell had its assets stolen 3 years ago in Russia. They've now been invited back by Putin, and they're going back. Are they demanding proper protection for those investments? Doubtful. What we need is, we need those companies that are going to be invited back because this Russian ship is slowly sinking. We need those companies to make real demands and their governments to make real demands about rule of law and an equitable and realistic level of fair and equitable treatment for American and other foreign companies.
How does this affect American business?
Well, dramatically. I think the United States, and in fact, all of the American businesses that have been waiting to get into Russia have found that without this rule of law, they are losing a tremendous amount of opportunity to, particularly Italian and some German businesses that are basically prepared to play by Putin's rules. And American businesses lose out when the White House isn't aggressive about pushing the issue of rule of law, because it is that fundamental issue. It is that fundamental issue that gives the American companies some level of balance in respect to these negotiations. Very often the European leaders are prepared to play this game. They are prepared to play this game that involves what I call basically the politics of proximity to power. They will get close and personal with a Putin, and they will cut deals, as we found when Eni bought Yukos assets, even though Gazprom wouldn't buy them. It's sort of a fight to the bottom of morals, ethics, and law. And the United States needs to set something of a standard, because as long as we are insisting on the enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act with American businesses will not be able to obtain their share of scarce resources if they're the only ones attorneying to international law.
The corruption you mentioned, how rampant is it? Is it rampant amongst this club that you mentioned at the top in Russia, amassing wealth for themselves?
Oh, listen, I have, the only thing I can tell you is that corruption in Russia is ranked at about the same level as Bangladesh. It is absolutely a cancer, eating away at the country and eating away at the society. And let me tell you, there is no one who will even argue that point anymore. And that's a key issue. And that's an issue that simply will not and does not go away.
Well, you paint a rather dark picture of all this, Bob. Are you back involved in that trial now, and are you going to be involved in the new trial?
Yeah, I am involved in the trial, but I have been refused entry to Russia.
Oh.
Which is, of course, another violation of my client's rights. And, you know, the fact of the matter is the trial, which has been going on for some months, has already been demonstrated to essentially not be conducted, not only in respect to the rule of law, but it makes the allegations are almost the mirror of the first set of charges. They are diametrically opposed. They now accuse Khodorkovsky of having personally benefited and laundered $14 billion, monies that they had in the first trial argued were Yukos's money. So even their prosecution is absurd on its face.
In fact, the German
Bundestag tomorrow is considering a joint resolution of the parties calling for more rule of law in Russia and pointing out the horrors of the Khodorkovsky case.
It seems to me I read someplace, I mean, I might sound stupid with this, but it seems to me he's more or less accused of embezzling as much oil as they actually took in for 6 years or something along that order. Am I wrong?
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The numbers are so outrageous, and the concepts are so illegitimate that you have to wonder if they're trying to fool anyone by this show trial.
All right. He has obviously stepped on some toes that didn't appreciate it very much. Well, I wish you success in this, Bob. I would like to reserve the right to have you back on. We have another gentleman we'd like to talk a lot about some of these days soon is Mr. Chavez. And I know you've been involved in that part of the world as well. Bob's been involved in lots of parts of the world. You've been in the Philippines and in South America, Central America, and Russia. You're a fascinating story, Bob. Bob Amsterdam, Bob, you've got a website, right?
We do, www.robertamsterdam.com. And we just published this white paper, which you can download from the blog. And thank you so much, Guy, for having me.
Thank you, Bob Amsterdam. Check that site out, robertamsterdam.com. This trial that is taking place, and I didn't have a chance to properly set this up for you. Bob came in a little early today. A fascinating, fascinating story of intrigue and corruption. And it's not a novel. It's all true. And I tell you what, anybody that would go over there, you actually get arrested in Russia. Why am I still tempted to say the Soviet Union? I guess people my age will always say that. Actually got arrested in Russia during this trial and got his way out of it and now has refused entry back into the country. Real legal heroes. He's represented people in the Philippines. He's involved in a case against Chavez. He doesn't mind speaking up. So robertamsterdam.com. Go in there and read that white paper. Believe me, you'll find it fascinating as I did. robertamsterdam.com. I'm going to pause for a break. I'm going to give you another one of these Sputnik Weasel songs that I was telling you about earlier. Hope I won't play the same one I played the first time around. Here we go, and we'll be back.
I was 19 when Lennon died. Ooh, bum, 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 bum. I was 19 when I heard a lie. Ooh, I was 19 when Lennon died. Ooh, bum, 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 bum. He wasn't killed, he was crucified. Truth or a lie? Yeah, it's hard to decide between a wrong or a right. When we're all staring up at the same black sky, it's hard to decide between a first or a second lie.
First or a second line.
And we're back here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Hope you enjoyed that. Again, I apologize for not setting that up properly. I was about to get things set up. Bob was on a flight to Germany, and we had to change the time that he was going to be on, and it turns out he must have arrived a little early. Let's see, what time is it? Oh, it's late. He's probably wanting to get to bed. It's got to be, what, 5, 10... I don't know, 11:30, 10:30 in Germany. Oh, well. Anyway, a fascinating man. I know Bob had a chance to speak to him in Washington as well, an international lawyer, and we'll get him back on to have more of this story here some of these days soon. I was telling you about how I think Fox News is... Well, they're absolutely, positively, and I don't know how you can do it any other way. They're an un-American, anti-American organization, and I will not back down from that. They are. The things they say, the things they allow their people to say, shameful. Shameful. And this latest one, this Schuer guy said on Beck's show, and for those of you that think Beck is smart, He's cagey, he's wily, he's all of that. But as far as, and I hear him talk about being a student of history a lot. Listen to this, and this is no misspeak. This is not misspeak. This is not something where he said one thing and meant another. He believes what he says right here coming up.
This guy, when he was on the show just a few minutes ago, I'm listening to him, I'm thinking, you're exactly right. How can you not be laughing at us? How can the world not be? We have all of these resources. Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s? Yeah. We bought Alaska for the resources. And then we say no.
Did you catch that? Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s? Why did we buy Alaska in the 1950s, Glenn? Glenn, baby, better go back and restudy some of your history, Glenn. Bought Alaska in the 1950s for the oil? Yes, this is one more that's one more little piece there that's indicative of the intelligence that comes to you over Fox News. Day in and day out, and we have people. Imagine how many people are repeating that as we speak right now. How many people are arguing politics tonight with their neighbor and these drill people and say, yeah, we bought Alaska in the 50s to drill for oil. Why don't we drill in all over? Why don't we just drill in every place? That's why we bought the place in the 1950s. And some people will stand there and listen to it and go, yep. And others will look at this and go, well, you're a fool. You're a fool. And then they'll stand there and defend themselves and say, no, I heard Glenn Beck say it. It's got to be true. It has to be true. Glenn Beck said it. Well, we've certainly had a lot of news the past few days, and if you don't mind, probably... go over a little bit of it for a moment or two. And I would be remiss if I didn't bring this up one more time, since the man himself doesn't want to shut up about it. And I'm talking about the beloved governor of South Carolina, Mark Sanford. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd like to talk to him and say, shut up. Shut up. You're telling us more than we need to know. You're telling us more than we want to know. And how could you be such an insensitive bastard to say some of the things that you've said? Now, a lot of people have engaged in the activity that Mark Sanford has. Lots of people. And I'm not going to sit here and be judge and jury. Nobody should. But some of the things the guy has said in front of his wife, called his Argentine mistress his soulmate, and he's telling all of us he's trying to reconcile his marriage? He said that with a straight face, trying to reconcile his marriage, and yet he called his Argentine mistress his soulmate, but said he would try and fall back in love with his wife. Well, pin a rose on you. And he also admitted Tuesday that he saw Maria Belen Shapur more times than he previously had disclosed. And that he'd crossed lines, to hear him say it, crossed lines with a handful of women other than his mistress in the past, but never had sex with them. Now, you see where he's going with this. He's going down the religious path with this once again. He had the nerve to compare himself to King David, that King David, you know, had this little deal going on with Bathsheba, and even made sure that Bathsheba's husband was left to die or left to be killed by the opposing army so that he could have Bathsheba by himself. And King David didn't resign. I guess it's mighty important to be able to quote the Bible and the Bible stories to the people in South Carolina and the people of the Bible Belt. They will listen to him and they'll say, you know, yes, he made a mistake, but he's a godly man. He's a godly man because he's giving us quotes from the Bible now and telling us about his love of the Bible and his religion. And we really respect him for that. He said he had met with his Argentine woman in New York a few times. And he also said that he'd, quote, let his guard down. Now, why did he do this? Somebody want to tell me, why did he do this? I think he's an asshole to put his wife through and children through this by continuing to open his mouth. He said he'd, quote, let his guard down with some physical contact with women other than Shapur and his wife, but didn't, quote, cross the sex line. Had some physical contact with women other than his wife, but didn't cross the sex line. Okay, what does that mean? Does that equate with the Bill Clinton statement, I did not have sex with that woman, that oral sex is not considered sex by some people? He wouldn't go into detail, thank God. And he said the casual encounters happened outside the U.S. while he was married, but before he met Shapur. Now, this guy has been a dog all along, hasn't he? This isn't just something that happened once in his life that he thought, you know, this is the love of my life, this is my soulmate. Turns out he'd had a few others before that. And now he previously announced he'd reimburse the state for the money that he spent during these trips to Brazil and Argentina. But now he's gone back on that, and he says, maybe not. It's just been reported to me that South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford has backed out of a promise to release personal financial records proving he did not use state money for trips to see his mistress. I see. So, and I'm further told here that a day after Sanford declared in an emotional Associated Press interview that his mistress is his soulmate, spokesman Joel Sawyer says the governor does not want to discuss personal matters in the media anymore. The state is investigating Sanford's travel. The state is investigating his travel to see the Argentine woman the governor has identified as his lover. Aha. Uh-huh. What does that mean? He let his guard down with some physical contact, but didn't cross the sex line. The sex line, is that something the Baptists talk about? Is that an official Baptist, the sex line? Didn't cross it? Never heard of that, the sex line. Is there like a red dot drawn across? This is the sex line. I don't know. Well, I don't know. It seems to me his wife is maintaining a dignified persona about her. Says they're trying to reconcile their 20-year marriage, but have not been sharing the same house for several weeks. And you know, she found out about this when she discovered a letter the governor had written to his mistress. Now, some of this was just, I thought, absolutely funny. In early 2009, after Jenny Sanford discovered the affair, the couple went into counseling, and she's told the Associated Press that he asked her several times to visit the mistress, and she refused. How does that work? How does that work? You're sitting over and you're having some pork chops, okay? And you're in the governor's mansion, and you're sitting around dinner, and you got your pork chops and your stuffing and your mashed potatoes and all that. You're sitting there. You had some peaches for dessert. We grow a lot of peaches in South Carolina. And you're sitting there, and you're kind of staring off to space a little bit. And the wife says, "Well, Mark, what's wrong, Mark? Is there something bothering you?" And he says, "Well, yes, Jenny, actually there is. There is something bothering me. I have something to ask you." "Well, what is it, Mark?" "Well, I kind of been wanting to go down to South America and see my mistress." "Well, now, Mark, we've talked about this before, and I've told you the answer is no." "Yes, but dear, I really would like to go. I really like to go because, you know, she and I, we've had a connection from the very beginning." "Well, Mark, I don't think it'd be a good idea." And he said, "You know, it was before safe, but now it's not safe. We got to put the genie back in the bottle." And he met her two more times in Manhattan in September and three nights in the Hamptons in November. Each time he claims he flew coach, paid for it himself, paid for the hotels in cash, and told the staff he was reachable via cell phone. Was this with or without his security detail? There's been much made of that lately. And so after asking if he could go visit the mistress and being told, "No, Mark, you cannot go," the governor claims he wanted to end the affair in person and, with his wife's permission, went to New York with a, quote, "trusted spiritual advisor," unquote, serving as chaperone. The three went to church and dinner together and parted ways the same night. Now, that had to be pretty cool, don't you think? Mark and Maria and the chaperone all went to church together and had dinner. I don't know if they went to church and then had dinner. And they all have a glass of wine and toast. "Yeah, this is to the breakup. I'll see you later, Maria." And parted ways the same night. But it turns out that wasn't the last trip to be, because we went back to Argentina on June the 18th. Boy, there's some terrible things being asked on the on the chat room. You people are just bad. You're just bad. I'm just bringing up facts here, and your minds are running wild on there. Oh yes. But it's shut up, Sanford. Shut up. You got kids. You got four boys that can read newspapers. Shut the hell up. What a dumbass. And to think I'm not moralizing over this. That's not the point. I just think he's stupid. He's really stupid in his behavior and the way he's handled this. He's really stupid. Oh, and the people in the chat room don't agree with me. They want him to keep talking. He may well. Although he did tell one of his associates that he wasn't going to speak to the press anymore about this. He's probably figuring he's in trouble now that they're investigating the money. That's probably it. And my goodness, we've lost one of the most famous Americans. God rest his soul. A guy with the most annoying voice I think I've ever heard in my life, but made a lot of money and could sell anything, Billy Mays. You know, the guy with the dark black hair and the dark black beard, selling OxyClean and Hercules hooks and Mighty Putty. I tried the OxyClean once. I didn't think it was so great. But he died, and I guess he had some sort of a heart problem of some kind. Says he could sell anything. He was learned his trade on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. Oddly enough, Ed McMahon passed on last week, and Ed always said that's where he made his career started out, was on the boardwalk in Atlantic City, being a hustler. And I see the people from OxyClean and a couple of other things are taking their product off for a few days, at least until after the funeral, out of respect to Billy Mays, kind of a recent phenomenon. And I kind of got a kick out of him. I did. Well, we're going to pause for another break, and we'll a little more Sputnik Weasel here.
Paranoia got the better of me. Paranoia got the better of me. I feel like a monkey on a puzzle tree. Paranoia got the better of me. Paranoia got the better of me. Paranoia got the better of me. I feel like a monkey on a puzzle tree. Paranoia got the better of me.
Mortality, that and morality combine to haunt all the corners and cracks in the borders of my mind. I'm picturing you with confusion and wonder if all your emotions are painted by number and filed in appropriate boxes named under the level of pain that's afflicted asunder, and I won't cry. I won't cry. A Molotov cocktail explodes in the suburb of your mind. Butterfly's wing stops the ocean from freezing a fine line. How do you live with the knowledge that your life's alive and love is the breath of an echo you heard before laying yourself down to sleep in a glass case from which you might never awake from? And I won't cry. I won't cry. No, I won't cry. I won't cry.
I better brighten it up a little after that. How are you doing today? Oh, my. Here we talk about doom and gloom and death and destruction and politicians out running around willy-nilly. Hey, that's what we do. That's our job. To bring you the latest political news and opinion, and I think we do that, don't we? We talk about the pertinent things. We've talked about Michael Jackson today. We've talked about a little bit about Ed McMahon, and who else? Farrah Fawcett passed away last week, and I see that don't tell me. The actor that passed away today. Carl Malden passed away at 97 years of age. 97. My word, that's a good old age. Starting to hear a lot more people live to be that age. I happen to know somebody that's 102 and gets around pretty doggone well. 102 and still drives, huh? That's a little old gal. Yeah. You know what bothers me most of all about this deal with this Sanford guy, and as I've said a dozen times, I don't care what he does in his private life. I really don't. But you know, to bring religion into it, it's one of the things that just makes me sick about these right wingers. It just makes me absolutely want to puke. When I hear him get up and I said, well, you know, I had an affair with my wife, and God is going to, in the Bible, and the God and affair and sex and affair and God and the Bible and everything. And they just all kind of mix it in there real nice. Just, as they say in a bakery term, kind of fold it in. So that they know he's confessing on the one hand, and on the other hand, they still think that he's a good Christian boy. That's what he's aiming for, and that's how a lot of them will accept it. Yes, sir. Well, let him without sin cast the first stone. But right away, that's what he started, and then day later he started out with the King David thing, and it just gets me the way these people kind of just kind of mix that in at every, and they use it. And the people on the other end that don't understand what these guys are doing. They're too stupid to understand that they're using these folks' religion, and supposedly their own, the politicians' religion as well, though I don't buy that. They're using it to sucker them. When are they going to learn? And you know, a couple of great examples of that. I heard on the news today or yesterday, I forget when it was, the last got a few days, that Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin wrote a, there's an expose coming out about her in Vanity Fair, and ooh my, some of the Republicans getting into a real fight over this thing. But, it mentioned in there that when Trigg was born, that Pera wrote an email letter to friends and relatives describing the belated news of her pregnancy and detailing Trigg's condition. She wrote the email not in her own name, but in God's, and signed it, quote, Trigg's Creator, Your Heavenly Father. Now, who writes a letter detailing their new child's condition and signing it, Trigg's Creator, Your Heavenly Father? Who does that? I don't know. Well, unless it would be Joe the Plumber. And Joe the Plumber, you all remember Joe the Plumber, intelligent whiz kid that he is, real intellect. He says now he's not going to run for office. I don't recall anybody asking him to. He said, you know, I talked to God about that, and he was like, no. Well, if he actually could and did talk to God about that, I would have expected that that would have been the answer, that God would have gone, no, I don't think so, Joe. I don't think it's in the card for you, my son. If I can presume to know what God might think about that. But Joe the Plumber, last year at the height of his fame as Samuel Joseph Wurzelbacher, a.k.a. Joe the Plumber, said that he was considering a run for public office. He said, I'd be up for it. That's what he said back then. I'd be up for it. And his excited fans, and wouldn't you want to meet them? Mm-hmm. Fans of Joe the Plumber. How'd you like to take an IQ test of a room full of Joe the Plumber fans? I'd be willing to bet you this microphone and everything else in this room that it wouldn't touch triple digits. No, 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 no. But anyway, he says to his fans back then, I'd be up for it. And his fans set up a draft Joe the Plumber site. Ah, yes. But in a new interview with WorldNet Daily, who else? Wurzelbacher said that he now isn't planning to run because God doesn't want him to. Good question, Lauder J. Did he Twitter God or did God Twitter him? I don't know. Asked if he plans to run for public office, he replied, I hope not. You know, I talked to God about that, and he was like, no. And he continued, I believe he's gotten me on this grassroots movement. So in other words, God told him, Joe, don't run for office. Stay in the grassroots movement, boy. He said, if I can encourage leaders to step up, that's what I would like to do. You know, you can just see Joe the Plumber out searching for candidates and urging them to work for the greater good. And they would take his sage advice, wouldn't they? He said, that's a heavy role. That's something I don't know if I'm prepared to do yet. But Wurzelbacher said, unless ye worry about what I said, unless ye despair over what I just mentioned, Wurzelbacher said he will keep that door open if God ever calls him to be that leader. And it will encourage you to know, it'll brighten your day to know, that Joe Wurzelbacher is preparing to participate in the upcoming tea parties. You see, there are going to be some more tea parties. They worked so well the first time around, they want to do it again. Well, well, well. So we have Sarah and her good friend, Joe Wurzelbacher, Joe the plumber. Sarah signing God's name. Now that troubles me a bit. Because people always said, someone said, God needs money, and they're taking up the collection plate. They wrote out a check to God. Would Sarah sign it? I don't know. Would she endorse it? Could be. Hey, thanks for listening to the program today. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I'll remind you, as I usually do, that this is a listener-supported program, and we could use your help right now. We surely could. So we hope you'll consider that. And the Head On Radio Network as well. We've got a lot of great things planned coming up for you in the near future, and we want to take all of our listeners along with us on this ride that we're on right now. So thanks for joining us again. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.